Good evening. You are passing through a dimension, not only of sight, not only of sound, but of mind and horror. You are listening to yet another episode of Hey, the signpost up ahead is of the last knock, is what I meant to say.
Nice. Well, hey, you control the audio, Johnny. We don't control any video, but you do control the audio.
So whatever comes out of my stupid mouth is part of the record. That's great.
Yeah, we're screwed now.
Yeah, we're... The last knock, flubbing those openings since 2013.
Yeah!
Or, yeah, in any case.
Whatever.
Tonight, Billy and I are going to be talking about something we've talked about before. However... You, the listener, are only hearing it for the first time because some mysterious circumstances befell us the last time we were together and recorded a show, or so we thought. We spent about an hour and a half talking about Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead's latest film, The Endless, only to discover that technology betrayed us, or was it something more? And we lost the show.
Maybe we're just going to record this show over and over and over again. It will be endless, Johnny.
I'm kind of thinking that's what it's going to be, Bill, and we've had this sort of insanity rise up before, so we're no strangers to that. But in any case, before we get into the film proper, we're going to issue a huge-ass spoiler alert right out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any way around...
None. Zero. No way.
Yeah, even just to tease around the concepts of this film, I think you'd have to tread so lightly that you couldn't really talk about much at all. So,
no.
So there you have that. If you haven't seen the movie, go check it out if you're interested, or if you're not, just feel free to listen to our conversation, and please let us know what you think.
Woohoo!
Granted, you don't get stuck in a loop as well, so...
Oh, no. Hey, Johnny, why don't you just start the show? Wait, did we do that already?
Bill, did you remember to hit record?
Fuck you, man.
No, we're in a loop. I, Banda!
We're in a loop, man! We're in a loop! Give me a gun!
We're gonna buy it on this loop, man! But in any case... Billy, the duo of Benson and Moorhead are fairly... I know of, including this film, I know of three films by them. I'm not sure if they've done shorts in
the
past.
They have. But okay. this is their third feature. Co-directors. Was this Justin Benson's foray into writing solo?
Yeah, he wrote the script.
Yeah. And they share directing duties, which is cool because they both star in this one, and which is interesting. And it's cool because while one's acting, the other can direct. And I don't know how you direct each other when you're in a scene. I don't know how people do that. I mean,
but... Well, I always thought about that when Clint Eastwood's acting, yeah, directing a movie, but he's the main actor in the movie. So
yeah, but. Yeah, this was a low budget. They kept it, to keep the money low, well, we'll talk about it. They used one particular song over and over in it, and had a small group of actors, a good troupe, and went to town.
Yeah, and, it's sort of evident as you're watching it that it is a low budget film in that it, uses some limited locations. I'd say the cast is... fairly economical. Considering, just in terms of how many people are in the film and have speaking parts and everything.
Yeah, they have a lot of extras, but people will be familiar with Callie Hernandez, Emily Montagu, James Jordan, Tate Ellington, and Kira. Well, it was the first time I saw Kira Powell, and I hope I see more of her. That's for sure.
Nice. Well, and Bill, what do you think about? Because I know we've both seen Benson and Moorhead's previous features. What do you think of Resolution and Spring, which were their previous films?
I liked Spring. I think it's a great true horror romance. Resolution, it made my list of top 80 f- 4 greatest horror movies ever made. So that's I love what they do. I think they have a great sense. What they do is they're best at creating atmosphere. I really enjoy that the most. I love their cinematography, and I love how it's like they look at horror in a different way. It's how can we tell a story that hasn't been told before, which I appreciate more than anything else. You want original storytelling, you got to go with Benson and Moorhead.
Yeah, and something I think is interesting, Bill. I think we're flipped on Resolution and Spring. I like Spring more than Resolution.
That's okay. I still like you, Johnny.
But there, as filmmakers, I think, and this might be part of the low budget sensibility, they do like their limited locations, and they do like to kind of plant their characters in one place and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. They let the characters do the work, which I like. So.
And we're both big adherents of the, you know, the importance of character and story. It's like you know, if you have great characters, it's almost like sometimes the story can write itself, I think.
Absolutely. And my big draw with Resolution was its uniqueness. It's, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen, and it just kept unfolding in very strange ways, and I love that. Right up until the end, it was just like, okay, what the hell's, wow. You know, it's just like, you know, it's one of those. You know, when my brain, like, when I get a headache after watching a movie, that's a good sign.
Well, something I like about Spring, Bill, to give the other side, I think what I found striking about that film in that it was unpredictable, and it gave you a lot of stuff you don't see in a typical horror film. It's like they really like to play with notions of genre to the point where genre comes up as like a conversation topic among critics once they release a film. It's like, what is this really? It's like a whole bunch of stuff. It's not just this one. It's not Saw. It's not Friday the 13th. It's not like that.
Thankfully. Yeah, and that's what I like about this. I mean, if you look, it's listed as a fantasy first, I think, a drama, mm-hmm. a horror, and all of their movies have a major fantasy element.
Yeah.
You could almost say like they're like it's Grimm's fairy tales, you know, we're dark all over again, you know, like the original tales of old. So that's what I like about them with their storytelling.
Well, and to that end, Bill, what do you do you want to give us a summary of the plot of The Endless? I mean, since
sure.
we threw up the spoiler alert, but you can give us just a brief synopsis of things.
Yeah, Justin and Aaron are two escapees from a UFO-based apocalyptic cult, and life has not taken off for them at all.
No pun intended.
And brother Aaron's like, you know what? Let's go back to the cult. Let's check it out for a day. Let's see what's going on. Because as far as they know, no one in the cult committed suicide, anything like that. And they're looking for answers. Nothing's going in their lives. They can't even get dates. So they decide to revisit their old haunt. And hijinks ensue. All right. It isn't hijinks, but answers? Answers come into play?
It could be otherworldly hijinks going on, Bill.
Maybe. Maybe otherworldly.
Yes. And, I mean, what do you think of the... I think the setup of the film is interesting, and you know, I gotta say, the first thing you see, I think, is like a package being dropped on a stoop.
Yep.
And that package is essentially the catalyst that gets everything in motion with these two brothers.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there. It's like one of those simple, I don't know, Hitchcockian conceits, kind of who sent the package, who dropped it off. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when we first recorded this, we left that out. And I think it's really important because they think one of the characters sent this package, and she's like, no, I didn't. It wasn't me. So, you know, who sent the package?
And then it becomes a question of, like, is that character funning with them, or is, you know, is there something greater to that?
So. I think another entity sent it, man. I want those guys back. Here you go. Here's a package.
It's kind of like it kind of goes back to our conversation about Prince of Darkness. It's like almost a tachyon thing going on there.
You know, it might, but you know what I'm wondering? I'm wondering if the one brother sent it to himself.
Hmm. Interesting.
Like Aaron did it.
Maybe.
You know.
And that's something that doesn't have a resolution per se.
Oh, resolution. Funny you bring that up, Johnny.
But I guess, Bill, how did you feel like from, because Benson, like you said, wrote the film.
Right.
How did you feel the writing was? Like, how did you feel the dialogue went, the character interaction, the flow of events in the film from a script perspective? Did you feel it flowed seamlessly? Or
no, not seamlessly. It was disjointed to me, and that's what I like about them. To me, it's more realistic if it's disjointed. So okay. they're so disjointed in what they do that it becomes a rhythm and a flow.
Okay.
And that creates for me suspense, even though, you know, regardless of what happens. I felt that in Resolution, I felt that in Spring, and I felt it in The Endless, which I wish they had just called Endless. But I don't know why the is there. It pisses me off. But that's what I liked about it. I know... Well, what did you think about the dialogue and all, Johnny?
I thought it was functional, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, watching Spring and Resolution, and I can't help but bring those two into the conversation here, and I think Resolution's going to come in even more into our conversation about The Endless.
Okay. I think they all can, to be honest. I think it's a trilogy of sorts.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Benson Moorhead extended universe going on here.
Quite.
Which is cool. You know, it's neat that they're finding ways to sort of overlap the worlds of these films. But, I wasn't really particularly taken with the dialogue, I guess. It didn't really grip me or grab me. And I think... Again, we talked about this on the show that wasn't. but something that bothered me immensely about this film was the fact that there seemed to be just like too many long passages of characters speculating on things, too much exposition, too much on-the-nose character introduction. That it kind of seemed clunky to me. So I can get what you're saying, Bill, about the disjointedness creating its own rhythm. And I think there were certain things about this film that were maybe a bit jarring, but to mm-hmm. me, there weren't enough of those moments, and they weren't jarring enough for my liking. And
right.
I think the writing kind of played into that. I feel like there was a lot of, you know, despite the fact that there aren't a lot of answers in this movie, it did feel...
Are there?
well, we'll get into that. But it felt a bit too... There seemed to be a bit too much calculation in the dialogue, and maybe that's why it felt to me that it was just merely functional instead of exceptional.
See, that... You know, I'm not saying it's exceptional by any means, but I didn't feel what you felt in regard to it, like not working,
okay.
or right. being too expositional, or I didn't even think it was really dialogue heavy. I mean, I didn't get that. I was just trying to figure out what the hell's going on, you know.
I mean, and that's fair enough. And I know we had that difference in perception when we, when we talked about it before. So. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be interested to hear what other people think if I'm sure. like off base on this or what. But
no, you're not, because you perceived it in one particular way, and you can't deny your emotional attachment to the film one way or the other. I mean, it is what it is.
And maybe so. it was my shadow self, Bill. I'm not sure.
It could have been that, or maybe you had too many jalapenos that night and you weren't feeling comfortable.
Well, and I think something else was that some other films came to mind while I was watching this one, and just, you know, not to get into it very much, but I find that with this type of fiction and mm-hmm. this kind of subgenre of story that they're telling, I sometimes feel like, just for me, from my own personal taste, I find it better when the images speak, you know, tell the story rather than a lot of, oh, well, let's just sit and pontificate on this, you know, for X amount of time and have this weird little dialogue back and forth. That doesn't do it for me, really.
Well, no, I understand, but I think they were trying to create, especially in, like, you know, the first and second act, was, is this a dangerous cult or not? And that was almost like a head fake for what was really going on. And so, and it wasn't much of a head fake, to be honest. Because, no, because it's like I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't think this is really what they think it was, or said it was, or felt it was, or imagined it was. And I'm like, so what's really going on here? And, but, you know, maybe that could have been part of it. I don't know.
So you're thinking, Bill, it wasn't really much of a, it wasn't like much of a surprise when they bridged the second act to the third act, but you were okay with that?
Yeah, I was okay with it because I wanted to know why those people were there. That was my question, not like, all right, what kind of cult is this? Or, you know, whatever. It's like, if they're still there. And it dawned on me at one point, it was like, this is 10 years after the fact.
Yeah. You know,
they had broken away from the group for 10 years. And 10-year absence. And they go back and they're meeting people like they just left the day before.
Yeah.
Or a week before anyway. And I'm like, these guys have been... I mean, we saw the inside of their house. They've got nothing. They can't get dates. They can't... They're always having trouble with the car, you know, for because Aaron's leaving the light on and it's draining the battery in there or some crap, you know?
Right.
And it was like their lives were on hiatus for like a 10-year period. And I think that... It's all revealed why at the end, and what we can imagine what's going on. So,
yeah, and that's true, Bill. And do you think this just popped into my head? The notion of it being a cult and or this commune, and not the stereotypical ways you see people like in cults depicted in films, but there's that very kind of open and accepting attitude that's not quite earthbound, you know. It's like we're back to the earth and we're accepting of everyone kind of thing. Do you think Benson and Moorhead kind of manipulated that notion to sort of like, as you were talking about the head fake moment?
Yeah, absolutely, because you know it was interesting, you see these cults and stuff and they usually have hard and fast rules, and this group didn't, you know. You hear of cults where people are deprived eating protein, you know, so they could be controlled better, you know what I mean? But like in this one, they allowed for music and they didn't really force people to do anything, and nobody really dressed a particular way. Like there was individualization. Some culture, like they banned certain things like smoking and stuff. They didn't. Who could sleep with who? And like none of those rules were there. It was just like, well, we're here on this mountaintop and we have these cabins and, well, you could shack up with so-and-so, and, you know, it's like, we don't have much, but we have what we have, and, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I knew, you know, it was definitely different from the beginning. You know, if this was a cult, it was a new approach to cultism.
Well, Bill, and maybe that leads me to another question. How does The Endless stack up next to other films that deal with the notion of either escaping from or integrating yourself back into a cult?
Completely different, because this isn't your typical cult. This isn't your typical story about cultism or anything like that.
Okay.
Not at all. It's not... and that's where the fantasy element comes into play to a degree, because this isn't your normal cult. This isn't someone who's some megalomaniac, you know, trying to rip off a whole bunch of people and, you know, use them like puppets. Like, you know, Jim Jones or whatever, anything else. And there was no Kool-Aid in the film. And, you know, there wasn't even a sense of doomsday element in there. You know, we're preparing for, there's no mission. There's no supernatural end result. You know, they're just like, man, I don't even know what they were like, because they were stuck.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think sometimes you think of. I think, I guess I'll give Benson and Moorhead some credit there because
Well, that's
that
good.
just what you said, Bill, about the notion of being stuck. I mean, you can look at that from an ideological standpoint as well. Like when it comes to a cult, it's
Sure.
you're like trapped within this singular way of thinking, and nothing else is allowed in. So they kind of use that on a multifaceted level in this film.
Yeah, and that's because I think the whole thing is more personal and more psychological than that. And I think that's what the whole, the movie thematically is completely different from what one would expect, so.
Well, fair enough, Bill. And what do you think of, I mean, as far as the characters are concerned, it's a decent ensemble cast,
Oh,
but
yeah.
it also feels there's a certain intimacy to the group,
Sure.
which maybe the isolated setting plays into that as well. But what did you think about the characters, how they were written? Were there any standouts to you? I know one because we talked about it.
James Jordan's shitty Carl. Give me a gun, man! Don't touch my bike! The guy was like, he was the most amped up character, and it was funny because he was like the one guy who was, in this sense, he was the one who wasn't resigned to his fate. Like all the other people, I think they were just like so, oh man, whatever. I think like they might have been a cult at one point, and then they were like just worn down by time once they realized the predicament that they were in, and they were like, oh man, this is it. And he's like, screw that, man. I'm like, he's like, he was a lunatic, and I know you didn't like the character, but
Bill, there is no case. There never was. Your wife was very concerned about you. She's not my wife. I don't know who she is. It's all a big joke. Colin Friel's in Dark City.
Yes, I understand. Once you said that, I was like, ah, okay, I get it. But I just thought it was really cool that you have, the characters that stood out for me were the characters that weren't chilled out, that weren't laid back, that weren't, relaxed. Like Jennifer, Emily Montague's character looking for her husband, Michael. And because like she really didn't belong yet. And it's funny because like shitty Carl, he's away from the group because he's on his own, man. He's trapped in a world he never made, and he doesn't want to be there. And then you have this other guy from the 1900s who's stuck in his own bizarre loop, and it was just really strange. And they were the most standout characters because they weren't inactive.
Well, Bill, what to that end, I mean, I think a problem I had with this film was, I mean, and granted, the point you bring up is valid about those cult members being resigned
Yeah,
to,
placid,
yeah,
tepid.
to Yeah, to where what their fate is. Maybe they were enthusiastic when, before whatever the events occurred put them where they are now. But, I was kind of like, I honestly, I understand you being more receptive to the more animated characters, the characters who seem like malcontents and
Right.
that they didn't belong where they were. But I think that was my problem. I was like, I didn't really care much about,
Any of them.
really, I really didn't. And I was kind of like, that made it hard because this movie is almost 2 hours long, so.
Well, it's funny because it didn't feel like 2 hours to me, and I really cared about the. And this is odd because you know how I am.
Yeah, I do.
I didn't feel bored, and I didn't hate any particular character, or I didn't feel bored by the film at all. I was concerned for the characters because one of the things I noticed, there's this scene with Aaron and Justin on a lake. They're on a boat. They're fishing. It's a beautiful day. No one from the camp, no one from the cult, is out there swimming, fishing. having fun, enjoying the sun. No one. All these people do is they walk around camp. That's all they fucking do. And you know what? Because they've reached the saturation point where that's all they can do. And that's what the whole movie's about. And that's when the thing started to click in my head. Because I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I think that's why I didn't mind the dialogue. That's why I didn't have reservations about the characters or anything else. Because I started to get it. For me, anyway, my interpretation of it, the film. About what was really going on.
Yeah.
That's Johnny Numb not buying it, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, the whole thing with Shitty Carl, outside of the fact that it was a total ham-boning performance. I was so turned. I mean, he's talking like a fucking William S. Burroughs novel, but you know, with lunch, man. Yeah, pretty much. He's doing that cut-up style that Burroughs did so well, and you know what? But I'm
poor
sitting
James
there thinking,
Jordan, man, poor James.
Hey, Billy liked you, James, so there you go. But the thing is, essentially what the whole couple-minute sequence with him and Justin boils down to is him essentially laying out the goddamn plot to Justin. He's saying all this weird shit, but amid all the weird shit is all this, like, exposition, basically, that's going to advance the plot along, and that bothered me.
I can't argue that. Yeah, I can't argue that. That was...
Yeah.
It was like getting... It was like... Suddenly, like, walking through a meadow and suddenly getting hit in the head with a baseball bat. Yeah, I can't argue that. That makes it quite contrived.
I mean, I think with that sequence in particular, it kind of underlines my problems with the over-explaining of things. But I think if you'd taken out the stuff that was actually giving some of the plot away with Shitty Carl's dialogue and just let him ramble on like a crazy person, it might have been better. Because you're still like saying, you're scratching your head saying, what the fuck, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, the whole, like, I don't care. I guess we'll just get to the point of the story. To me, the whole point of the story is this. These people are just, they're stuck. They're stuck in a loop, whether it's from some entity, and we could talk about that in a second, or not. The point is that all of these people are... And it happens to a lot of people. I think it's a great reflection on society where people are just stuck. They have their heads turned on backwards a little bit. They're trying to figure out why they got to where they did. Instead of looking forward, moving forward, making changes, they're hung up on past regrets, past guilt, past problems, trying to hang a hat on that, like, one thing that caused their whole life to go wrong instead of taking action, so they're stuck. And they don't do anything, and they're caught in this loop, and and that's what we see with everyone in the story.
And I mean, Bill,
move beyond those moments, yeah.
Yeah, and you know something, Bill. Not to get personal, but I know you've been dealing with some struggles in your over the past couple of years, and I feel like The Endless kind of resonate with you on a personal level or an existential level, kind of? Like, did what it was saying really reach out to you?
Yeah, it did, because I'm not stuck. I easily could have been, and I mean, I was an emotional, fucked up wreck like I never have been before in my entire life, you know, loaded with fear about where my life, you know, what just happened in my life, what I had left, what I could salvage, and what I could do to move forward to rebuild. And it's taken a lot of time, but with, you know, great friends and family in my life, and you know, and that includes you, I was able to it's like an AA meeting, one day at a time, you know, and it had nothing to do with alcohol. Alcohol might have been an answer at one point, but that never came into play, really.
Unless you're talking about Banter's Hard Cider.
Yes.
Stroudsburg, PA.
It's, yep, you know it. Oh, man, Banter's. But anyway, it did resonate in that regard. Like, I felt like, man, this is cool. I'm not stuck in a loop. You know, I'm moving forward. I've had setbacks and this and that, you know, from starting my life over all over again from scratch. But it's, you know, it was just a shame that a lot of people just can't move beyond those personal nightmares that they have. And that's what I realized with the brothers. It's like they waited 10 years to go back to the group.
Mm-hmm.
And to find out, well, what happened? What can we do to, like, change our lives to make it better? And that's their loop. They're always going to go back to the group. They're never going to move beyond that point. Neither one of them can.
Well, Bill, do you think as time goes on that their characters, like, I guess, when they went to that, when they were stuck in that iteration of the loop, do you think their characters were different or behaving differently than in previous
I don't know.
Incarnations of the loop, or do you think it's like a literal repetition, like you're doing the same beats? It's like it resets to zero and you have no recollection of what. Because I'm not sure about that ending. I'm not sure about that. What that ending.
I think the ending's just not an ending, and it's the beginning. It's the end of the loop, mm-hmm. and then it would just automatically start with them getting the package again.
And then put it on repeat. Yeah.
Put it on repeat. But the thing is, it's we've seen those Star Trek episodes where they're caught in a loop in time, and somehow, some way, they get out of it. But this isn't about a time thing. This is about an emotional thing. And about growth. And like the one thing I didn't get is Jennifer, Emily Montague, she's looking for her husband, and Justin finds him but doesn't tell her.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you go here, you could get and that would break that loop, maybe. But he didn't. And I remember going, like, what an asshole. like, why wouldn't you tell her, man?
Well, do you think, Bill, it's kind of like that Mike, the guy she's looking for, is kind of left to inhabit his own loop for all of eternity because of Justin's inaction on that part? Or do you think it would have made a difference?
I think it would have made a difference. I mean, why can't people help each other and get out of where they're at? And that was the funny thing, because nobody in the movie was helping anybody else.
Do you think it ties into like the ambivalence kind of the, the people being resigned to their fate, except for the two you mentioned, kind of?
Yeah, and I've known people like that, and I think you have too. And I wonder, through different points of my life, and I wonder what became of them, because of the way that they spoke about the universe and their place in it. And it's like, no, this is the way it's going to be. And I remember, like, dude, you're like 20, man. Like, what the hell's going on? It's like, that's it? Take yourself out now, man. Like, what the hell? You don't see yourself advancing or moving or doing anything. And,
right.
You see that at different points all the time. And it's sad. There's a lack of creativity and a lack of verve, a lack of, it's like, if you're stuck, why not take a chance on something? What do you have to lose? What, go back to where you were? So what's the, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what the film's getting at kind of in its final moments is that, you do have that option to try and change your disposition. It's nobody's telling you you can't at least try, I guess is the... Yeah. I guess it's kind of the thesis there, even though it kind of is a bit, like you said, Bill, it's kind of like it's just going to reset anyway, despite that.
Yeah. But one of the things that right from the beginning, watching the movie, as soon as I saw the name, I'm like, I'm diving into that. And I was reminded that the name of the camp is Arcadia. And Arcadia is it's a mountain district in southern Greece. And this is supposedly where it was the home of the Greek god Pan. And Pan was a god who... there was like a pastoral paradise. And that's what this is. But is it really paradise? And it isn't. We see people just being like so mellowed out. They all could have been Perry Como. And... But Pan enjoyed music, and I thought that was great. You know, when they had the karaoke, that's sort of like it was like an aha moment. Like, yeah, I could see the Pan influence right there. You know, and so are we dealing with some sort of like a modern Pan? Want, you know, like, is he catering to them because they're stuck, or is he making them stuck? And I don't think he is. I don't think he is at all. I think he's actually, they're sort of like a god to, you know, they're sort of controlling him.
How do you figure, Bill?
Well, because like he's only giving them what they want. He's not making them stuck. He's not making them stay there. He's not making Carl kill himself over and over and over again. He's not making that guy who did get out, if you think about it, in the tent. You know, we see the splatter of blood, and it's like, oh, that changed. That record skipped for him, for real. You know, I think he's only giving them what they want.
So you think the characters don't want to advance, and that's why... Okay, that's why they are where they are?
Yeah, I think Pan's another excuse. Look at the guys. They're in their loop. Oh man, life sucks since the cult. Yeah, we got out, but we can't get dates. And I don't know what I'm doing. I only have $20 in my pocket. I can't even hold down a real job. We have no food. You know, our car sucks. And they've been like that for 10 years? Dude, no God's doing that. That's on you. That's on them.
Well, Bill, you know, to veer off a little bit here, what did you think of the dynamic and, I guess, the rationale behind Benson and Moorhead playing the two main characters in the film as brothers? I think we talked about the possibility that it was a budgetary concern that they cast themselves in the leads.
I think so, because I talked about this at length with David Wilde, David Wilde with an E, number 49 on Twitter. You know, he's like, well, it's one less actor for me to... And he comes from an acting background before he became a filmmaker for the Crime Lord series and such. He said, well, I knew I could rely on me. I knew I'd be there every day. It's one less person to pay, one less mouth to feed because it's me, you know, and it was one less thing for him to worry about. So if you have a low-budget film and you can act, and they can, and, you know, you go in there, that's great, you know. One less problem.
Yeah, I think, something that bugged me was that I think when you make a film about a cult, it's kind of a given that the characters are all going to be calibrated kind of a certain way because they're all kind of within this collective mindset, you know, right. You know, something like the Sacrament or Red State or something like that. Ooh. You know, hey, I liked Red State.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, I mean. You know, the chills from it, from those cult leaders that are so demanding and so self-righteous and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sociopathic.
And, I mean, the mentality and what the cults are about are all different. You know, they all have their kind of modus operandi.
Sure.
And, you know, this one is no different. So all the characters kind of have sort of a... They're kind of a bit dazed in their speech and, you know, going back to the notion of resignation that comes out, you know, a bit later when you find out what's really going on. But I found that the performances of Benson and Moorhead, I found, didn't jibe with me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they either weren't tuned in enough or they were tuned a bit too far out. And I kind of found, I know I talked to you about it, I kind of found it distracting throughout the whole thing, in part because I knew who they were, and I knew they also wrote, you know, they also wrote, directed, and did a bunch of other stuff on the film, so I think that almost took me out of it as well. So that was just a hang up on my end. I couldn't, the performances just weren't quite there for me, and they didn't quite grip me enough to get me invested in the story. So I think that was a huge problem I had.
Well, I think this is one of the rare times where I was more concerned about story than the acting, because I think I might have a different opinion if I view it again, but I thought everybody's performance pretty much was dialed back. a little bit, except for, to me, the standout was Jennifer, because she was the only one who had real, genuine, deep concerns. You know, all these other people, because she wasn't, and this is great, because she wasn't really a part of the group. Why? Right. Because she wasn't committed to her fate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I liked how she brought, like, a different kind of energy to it, where everybody else was like, they didn't have that energy anymore, because it's been sucked out of them for who knows how long.
Yeah, and it was definitely a contrast, Bill, and like you said, I was kind of, I think the film did spring to life in those moments with those other characters.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we should get to the something of not an elephant in the room, but a decision that the filmmakers make to revisit their previous creation. What did you think? What did you think about that, Bill? Because I did not see it coming. I know you're a big fan of Resolution, and yeah. I guess how did you think about the integration of the two? You know, we were talking about the Benson-Moorhead cinematic universe.
Well, unfortunately, a dear friend, you know, told me that was coming, and I wish he hadn't. And in the future, people, it's real simple. If you think I might like something, just tell me. And if you think I won't like it, just tell me. And that's all I need to know. So I knew it was coming, and I was waiting for it. It was a pretty seamless, you know, integration, but I didn't want it to happen. I wish it hadn't.
Okay. Why was that, Bill?
Because I want that movie to be Resolution to be standalone. I don't want to connect it with this at all. I want it to be whatever Resolution would be, or is, or whatever. Because I don't want the mystery solved. You know, I want it to be mysterious. I mean, that's what I like. That's one of the reasons I really love Resolution. Don't try to explain your first movie to me by sticking part of it into your third movie. Don't do that.
Well, I think what you're getting at, Bill, is kind of what David Lynch, you know, I think he famously said. I read an interview with him where he was talking about like mainstream movies and how he's usually so disappointed when a mystery is solved.
Yes, exactly.
And how he loves like the end of Chinatown, because Chinatown, it's just, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. You know, and that's
it, baby.
That's how the movie ends, you know. And yeah, so I think I get what you're saying. And
well, that's why he was really upset with ABC, because he wanted Twin Peaks. He wanted the murder of Laura to Palmer never to be resolved.
Oh yeah, and I saw interviews where he was talking about how that was sort of imposed on him and Mark Frost.
Oh yeah, it was forced upon him, and it ruined everything.
Well, it's like then it led into a season that they definitely didn't need. So,
and that's why he bailed on it, and well, we all know what happened.
Well, when he came back to do that very last episode, that was badass.
That was a kick in the balls, man.
Well, I think he was throwing his hands up saying, fuck it, I'm going to do what I want, and he really did.
He created one of the scariest episodes ever on television, man.
And I still haven't watched, I have it on my shelf, but I still haven't watched Twin Peaks The Return, just because I'm expectations-wise and experience-wise, I'm kind of scared to watch it.
No, I know what you mean. I get you.
So, all right, so the detour into Resolution didn't really do it for you, even though you are a fan of that film. It was more of a, they didn't need to add on to the mythos of that film because it was so self-contained and good on its own.
Absolutely, they shouldn't have gone there at all.
And, you know, at the same time, and like I said, I'm not as big a fan of that film as you are. I was just... That's another thing that catapulted me out of the film, because I only think Resolution is okay, so I didn't really care to revisit those characters again.
Mm-hmm.
and it felt like kind of a self-referential, the sort of self-referential stuff that I don't, it has to be done a certain way for me to embrace it. And I can acknowledge that Benson and Moorhead were trying to do something a bit clever and trying to cross-pollinate these worlds, so
mm-hmm.
whatever. But the fact that those characters weren't there for me in the same way the characters in The Endless weren't there for me just didn't help things. And I was like, to me, the movie felt endless, and it didn't need that detour tacked onto it for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I think you'll be surprised to know that I rated Spring higher than this one.
Really?
Yeah. Let me look at Spring. Let me look at what the hell I gave that one. I gave Spring... Yeah, 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I gave Spring a 4, and I gave Resolution a 3.
So did I. Oh, no, I gave Resolution a 4.5, and The Endless, I gave 3 stars.
Yeah, and I... Yeah, I...
You could go to 2.5, Johnny. It's all right.
No, I'm not going to 2.5. I'm sticking with my original rating, man.
Which is what, a 1?
Because I'm stuck in the loop. It's a 1.5. It's a 1.5, yeah.
1.5, wow.
I think you and me, Bill, our shows about movies so far this year, everything's been flipped. It's like everything I like, you hate, and everything... you hate, I actually really like, so...
And that's why I'm worried about you, Johnny.
But I will say this. I will say this before we wrap it up here. Two movies that really sprung to mind while I was watching The Endless that I thought were just generally better sci-fi speculative films that use the visual, you know, the visual aspect of filmmaking to tell a story really well. Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a total
trip,
you know, a total trip that's almost, you know, it doesn't have a lot of dialogue. It's mostly about the flow of images, and it's just a stunning collection of images. Also Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin, which is also a film that had... Yeah.
Oh, love that. No, Beyond a Black Rainbow was cool. Man, God, that movie's 8 years old already.
Yeah.
I gave that one 3 stars. And Under the Skin, I wanted to have sex with that movie.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to have sex with Scarlett Johansson in that movie.
But... I don't care. If that's the way I'm going out, take me, man. Take me! Take me, Scarlett.
But, you know, those are two movies that I was thinking about while I was watching The Endless because my attention was kind of drifting away from the movie a lot. So I was like, yeah, I'd rather be watching these movies because I feel like they kind of hit on some themes and notions that The Endless tries to do, but I felt kind of diffused by kind of going too much into the concepts, going too much into the speculation through like very explicit dialogue, you know, and that kind of threw me out of it. It's like, just trust your images to tell the story. You can have characters talking, but they don't constantly have to be explaining what's going on or what they're feeling, or, you know, it doesn't all have to tie up into a nice package. So,
well, Johnny, did you ever think that they wanted you to feel the way you do so you could break out of whatever hell your life is? Did you ever think that Justin and Aaron are trying to save you, man? Did you ever think that this is the birth of the cult that they're creating? Now I'm sort of scared. I can't believe I'm scared now, Johnny. I got to get out, man. Give me a gun!
I hope the cult of Benson and Moorhead doesn't require castration as a rite of passage. That's all I got to say.
And that was such a funny scene in there. I thought it was a great scene, especially when we learn information was like a cult. I'm the one who pulled you out of the car where your parents were, you know, in that accident and they got killed. And it's like, what the hell? and it's like, where do you affix blame for your problems and stuff, and like, can you move beyond that, you know, like, how many people do we know sit and go, oh yeah, this happened to me, and it's like, you know, break out the fucking piano and the violin. Everybody's got a story, you know, we all do, we've all suffered, you know.
Some
more than others, and there's no argument there. And you know, the thing is, what do we do to get beyond that? And are we going to use it as a crutch? And if we are, like, what's that going to do for you? And how's that going to, like, other people? Oh, yeah, I like how he uses that problem as a crutch. I'm really attracted to him. What? Come on, man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you, though, Bill, on that. I agree. It's like, just like, eventually you gotta let go, and I think you're gonna alienate and distance people if you're constantly pitying yourself over something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that goes without saying. You know, you might have some people just hanging out being like, yeah, it'll get better, but I think even those people will get tired of it after a while. You gotta, you know, own up and do your own thing and find your way through something.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, otherwise what are you wasting everybody's time for? So
yep.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, so anyway, Bill,
wow, can you hear my doorbell ringing?
Yeah.
And I'm not
getting
it.
Bill, I want my $2. $2!
Well, I'm not getting it. I'm going to do scream outs.
Yeah, why don't you do scream outs?
All right, here we go. These are people you can follow on Twitter who are amazing. And, well, we totally recommend that you follow them. The first one is the lovely, the vivacious Anthrax. That's with two X's. And she is... my gosh, her four faces. Oh my gosh, wait, I'm drinking now, Johnny. Hold on. good black cherry seltzer. All right, she's in her four basic food groups are books, music, film, and art. And you could follow her at anthrax.com, her website. Check her out. Jerks Productions, that's capital JERKS production. Philadelphia-based horror film and art production team. They support indie film, of course, and go to jerksproductions.com. The wonderful, the engaging Sames Carolyn, S-A-M-E-S. She's a writer, producer of indie films, president, owner of Universal Staffing. She's creating a sitcom. She's a traveler, and man, she's a great photographer. She might not tell you that, but she is. She's a horror addict, and she supports indie film out of Las Vegas. Please follow her. The great Kyle D. Hester. He's an actor producer, happily married to the Tracy Ray. And his films are Preacher 6, which he just got finished. They just wrapped. So they're in post production right now. The Chair Horror. And he's a pagan. Just in case you wanted to know, he's out of Hollywood. And look him up, Kyle D. Hester, on IMDb.com. And another person you could look up at IMDb.com is the phenomenal Kent_Harper. He's an award-winning actor, writer, filmmaker. Check out his acting reel on YouTube. Definitely follow him on Twitter. He's in the middle of filming Deterioration, his horror that's coming out. He's wrote, starred, and directing in. So please check that out. And Melanie McCurdy, she has a new book out, The Lunatic Posse. And you could follow her at melaniemccurdy.com. And she's a great author, artist, poet. She supports all things indie that are cool. Check out her books on Amazon.com. Another writer with their book coming out, Secrets in Blood. That is from the phenomenal, ultra phenomenal, Patricia D. Eddy. And she's an author, cat wrangler, editor, inventor of worlds, and unstoppable forces. And you can get a free copy of her paranormal romance, A Shift in the Water. So check out her Twitter and go to her website, PatriciaDEddy.com. Good friends at Nonprofit Horror. They're all about free horror promotion. Just tag them in your post and they'll retweet it. Anything horror related goes. And that's movies, books, music, you name it. Where are they? Under your bed, Johnny. And we have three more. The great, and I mean it because he's a wonderful artist. He really is. Anthony Galatis. And he is at Tony PND78. He's a concept artist and illustrator. Go to anthonygalatis.carbonmade.com. Check out his work. The awesome Cult Metal Flicks, F-L-I-X, scribbling on the pleasures of an unhealthily steady consumption of metal and horror. Sounds great to me. and you could go to his great website, drunkinagraveyard.com. Don't miss it. Ethan Silver 73, he is a freelance writer and internet entrepreneur. So definitely check him out. And he's out of Bangkok, Thailand. So that's wow. Ethan Silver 73. So that's our scream outs, Johnny.
All right, Bill. Where can people find you within the loop?
I'm right here, Johnny. Where I've always been.
you've always been the podcaster here, Bill.
Oh my God. Anyway, I'm in room 237. No, I'm in, oh my gosh, where am I? I'm on Twitter as Crash Palace. You could also go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and wonderful articles, which we'll resume shortly. And go to Redbubble.com, look up Crash Palace, and you could find great shirts and other merchandise for Crash Palace and The Last Knock because you asked for it, so we're putting them out there. Take a picture of yourself with whatever you purchased, and that'll help keep the show running. And Johnny and I will not get rich off those profits because there won't be much. But you get some cool stuff and send us pictures, and we'll run them on the internet and let everybody see you. Johnny, what about you?
Good deal. Hey, Bill, send a memo to room 237. They need air fresheners in that place like crazy.
We'll get Maria Olson. Remember? Remember she did the commercial?
Oh, did she?
Yeah, during the Oscars ceremony. They had the commercial where she was the woman cleaning up all the mess. Cleaning up the blood. Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, I got to see that. That's awesome.
And we love Maria Olson on this show just as well. So please check her out at Maria Olson 66 on Twitter. Phenomenal actress. I love her to no end.
She keeps busy too, so.
Incredible. Incredibly busy.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JohnnyNum. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my stuff on CrashPalaceProductions.com. I will also be resuming writing and sending stuff to Billy in the near future, unless I get stuck in a loop, in which case you can just read my Hereditary review over and over again.
Well, Johnny, on that note, I think we've escaped our own loop.
Well, we'll see about that, Bill, next week.
Oh, man. All right, Johnny, I'm calling it. Good night.
All right, good night.